All right. This is going to surprise Christy. So I'm going to ask all you kids, what do you want to be when you grow up? That's true. Sorry, I'm old, but my hearing is good. Are you adults? I mean, well, when I was 7 years old, my dream was to go to space. When I was 7 years old, my mom bought me a little toy. It's called Billy Blastoff, and I still remember it, and you can find it on eBay, so I need to get one. But it was this little space toy. So for me, I was a nerd growing up, and so I built model rockets, and I flew radio control airplanes, and I was a science geek and loved mathematics, and that's what I thought I was going to do. So when Christy and I got married, and that's my oldest daughter, Courtney, this was early on, that's a picture of me standing next to the space shuttle. So that picture was taken in 1996 when I was leading a team of engineers on the space station. So I dreamed and I thought that the plan for my life was to go to the moon and to go to space. And so I first learned to fly an airplane when I was 13 years old. My dad took me to the airport, and so I learned to fly. And I studied all my math and science classes. And my undergraduate degree is in electrical engineering. And I spent 9 years working on military aircraft. So I started on the B-2 bomber. And I worked on the F-22 Raptor, the B-1, the F-111, and the A-10, and the Boeing 777. And I did flight tests. So I used to help them fly those planes around. And then finally, I was blessed with being on the space station. So I worked with Russian engineers on the space program. And that was pretty exciting for me, but I thought that was going to be what my life was all about. But at 38 years old, I learned that attending church doesn't make you a Christian. Memorizing scripture doesn't make you a Christian. What makes you a Christian is what you believe. Do you believe that Jesus Christ is both Lord and God, and that he gave his life in substitution for our sins? And when we believe it, it should change our life. And for me, it didn't change my life. And so I came to faith when I was 38 years old, and I left all my dreams behind to go into ministry. So this was a radical change for us. When Christy married me, she had no dream of being a pastor's wife. She grew up in a family, dad was an atheist. And so that was the last thing on our mind. So she got gypped. And so my midlife crisis at age 40 was I left the space program. Let's see if I can bounce it. Oh, there's another picture. Where I was on the launch pad, we had just loaded the first piece of the International Space Station onto the shuttle. And so for me, that was a dream. But here's what happened right after I took this picture. The guy that took the picture for me, we went back to his apartment, and he's an unbeliever. And he said, hey, let's have a few beers together. I said, sure. So we were talking, we were celebrating. Both of us had dreamed of doing something like this. And he turned to me and he asked me this question. He said, who is Jesus? That was kind of a strange question to come from him. And I said, well, I remember from my days when I was a kid, kind of went through the four spiritual laws, you older guys, you know, talk the four spiritual laws, saying, you know, we're sinners, there's a chasm between us, and God is righteous, and only Jesus can bridge the chasm. I was going right through the spiritual laws in my mind, and he says, you know, this is really interesting. He says, everything you're saying is exactly what my dad taught me, and you're as big of a hypocrite as he is. He says, I see you standing here drinking beer with me, and then I know you go to church here once in a while with your wife. I laugh at your faith. So if God can speak through a donkey, he can speak through an unbeliever. So I put the beer down, hadn't touched anything since. And I went home to Christy and I said, I may not be saved. And so God used an unbeliever to lead me to him in saving faith. And when that happened, it changed my life forever. Now, I deleted, and this is where Christy gets to talk. I deleted the picture of my church because you guys have seen that already. But I never thought I would pastor. I never thought I would teach. And the last thing that Christy ever thought, I know you always get nervous when I do this to you. I'm sorry. And here, and I'll stand close to you. One of the things that Christy never thought she was going to do was to be a pastor's wife. She says our lives are like James Bond and
Ma Ingalls.
And so she'd like to be at home on the prairie and taking care of her family, and I love adventure. And so she wouldn't have thought this picture was possible. In this picture, she is meeting with ladies from three countries. They're all wives. They're all wives of pastors, and there's stories to them.
Yeah, I don't think I would have ever thought about being a pastor's wife or a missionary's wife or even being in a Christian family when I was growing up. And so this was far away from my mind. And I can tell you that my first trip to Russia was very scary. And we've been on some planes and trains and automobiles that have been very scary. But that picture there, I think, says it all in how God has blessed me in the midst of all the fear. And, just the way that he's worked in my life and given me the energy and the strength and the courage I've needed in order to do it all. Because once I finally get there, and I get to spend time with these women, there's nothing better. Each of these ladies represents a regional pastors. What's that? From different countries, Ukraine, Belarus, and Russia. And we had a women's couples conference for pastors and their wives, and we got to spend time with the husbands and the wives, and just talking about life and being able to encourage them, but not only them, but maybe how many other couples? Quite a few, 30. And to hear their stories, to encourage their hearts, and to have them encourage our hearts, it's just been amazing too. And God gives us the words. He gives us the experiences, and sometimes we feel like we've had more experiences than we really want to be able to have to help other people, but he puts people in your life that become lifelong friends. And just like coming here and picking up with you guys after 8 years, that's what I feel like when I go to Russia and Ukraine. So Nadia on the right is from Moscow. And how much do you want me to tell about each of them? Okay, well, so let's start. I was going to say, let's start with Golmira. She's the one right next to me on your left. And she ended up getting sent out with her husband into a very, very small village and very, very cold village. Where was it? Irkutsk. Oh, that's right. And she told stories of how her face was just super, super cold, and it was absolutely miserable and so hard for her to even be outside. And her husband actually was hardly ever home. They would pack him up. He was doing a handful of different churches, three churches. And she would pack him up, get him all ready, and then he would go out for the entire week, and he would come home on the weekend, and they would do it all over again where she would pack him up and everything again. So she was by herself. She was young. She had two babies at the time. And so her life was very, very difficult. And she just talked so much about being the helper of her husband, and even in all of the difficulties. And it didn't get easier after that. She ended up having, they came back to Ukraine. They've been in Ukraine for, into Kiev for a while. And she had her mother-in-law in the house, and she had kids in the house. And even on the way to the conference, they were riding in the car because they had to drive from Ukraine to Belarus. And there was a traffic holdup, and they sat in the car for 8 hours or so, just being together. And she was so thankful just for that time that she had with him, because they never got any time alone. First time in 12 years, so. Yeah. And Lydia is on the right, and she's, yeah, you're right. And she's from Belarus, and she's just a super sweet spirit and has had a really rough go of it with her kids. And we've had a lot of things in common with the different things that we've, different challenges that we've had with our kids. And so she and her husband have become very dear friends to us. And but she faithfully serves beside her husband and serves the women. When there's people in her church, the women in her church, she immediately is at their side, asking them questions, making sure they're okay, sitting with them, talking with them, always has a smile on her face. And so just, yeah, really sweet, sweet lady. So, uh-oh.
Yeah, it's pretty, all three of them, their husbands are directors with SGA in those countries. And so it's really easy for us to have a small office in the U.S. because we have three offices overseas in those countries with a larger staff, and they're all nationals. And they help us do the work that's there. It's pretty amazing. Lydia on the right, Lilia. She talks about the days of communism. And I guess her great-grandfather was killed for his faith. And so almost all the people you meet over there tell the stories of some family member that died for the sake of the gospel. I wanted you to see this picture because while we were there for the conference, I went to an orphanage in southern Belarus, and it's all special needs kids. And we had gone there, and they were so excited that the one boy is holding up the other one. The one in the front with the red shirt can't walk. And so his friend wanted to make sure he could get in the picture. And so he was holding him up so that he could be in the picture. And these are kids that the world really, for most intents and purposes, had forgotten. And we, I don't have another picture. We were there for Emmanuel's Child. And so we were handing out gifts to the kids, and the kids were blown away that someone would come and visit them. And, in this case, there wasn't deep teaching. Most of it was just spending time with the kids. And so it's amazing to see how, like when you're given towards Emmanuel's Child, you can see how these kids benefit from the ministry of a local church. And you already saw that picture. You saw that picture, yep. Just so you know, I'll get back to it. These three verses just remind me. Isaiah, here am I. He talks about the presence of where he is. It's not where I am. It's telling God, in a sense, here is all of me. And then Mary said, behold, in the middle of everything, let it be done to me according to your purposes. Mary didn't ask God to rethink it. And she knew that fulfilling the calling that God gave her meant that she'd be thrown out of the village. It means that she would have kind of like a scarlet letter. She would be ostracized, but she continued as an obedient servant. And Daniel resolved in his heart, means all the pieces worked out in his heart. He was a teenager as well, and he walked rightly before God in the face of the Babylonian king. And so a lot of times we think that our life is going to be a certain way, but what God doesn't ask us to figure out who we need to be. God asks us to surrender to who he wants us to be. And sometimes in the middle of our life, we dream of things as a kid. But as we get older, life gives us a lot of different changes that we have to deal with. But to us, it seems like a big course correction. But to God, it's just another brush stroke of color as he paints the picture of our lives. And so we have to be willing to understand that God is not done yet in the work that he does in our life, and not presuppose anything, but just be available for what he's doing. This is in Ukraine. Some of the pictures you saw, this one, when the war broke out in Ukraine, they didn't even have batteries for their tanks. So the Russians were coming in, they were attacking by air, by ground, and Putin had made a deal with them that he would always be their protector. So there was a light treaty between the two of them, and that Russia would always watch out for them, when in fact, when Russia was invading, they didn't have anything on their eastern border because they didn't expect anyone would ever attack from the east. So that was an easy walkthrough. And so they actually shoved some of their tanks with bulldozers into the ground so they could fire from fixed positions. They couldn't move their tanks. They just run them into the ground. And so these are pictures. There's a 50 caliber machine gun sitting in the nest as I took pictures. That's the bomb shelter that was across from the church. That was previously used for potatoes, but that's where they sleep when they're being shot at. And this is a really jerky video, but watch the rush. This is a picture from the church and looking out across the street. And the Russian artillery was having, they knew troops were staying in the apartment building there. So you can see they were about 3 kilometers away, and just they knew the troops were in that building, and they just continued. That's from where we weren't there when that shot was taken. It was a few weeks before that, but that's the front of the church there where they were watching the shelling come across, and they were trying to kill as many of the Ukrainian troops as they could. And so that is Artyom, who was 23 in this picture. And typical of a young guy, that's not the picture I took. He didn't like the picture I took. I said, oh, I've got to go back and tell your story. And he says, no, let me download one from Facebook and send it to you. So he didn't. He knew I was going to use a photo. Typical. This is now the other direction. This is up in Yakutia. And this is actually really interesting, and I don't know if I shared this with you. And let me see if I've got the picture. There he is. That's Valeri. So Valeri was the first missionary in the region of Yakutia. Yakutia is the size of the region of Yakutia is the size of India, but with only 1 million people. Okay, and there's 5 major people groups. First believer came to faith in 1991 after the curtain went down. So Valeri was looking to get married to his wife, Valentina. And right before they got married, they wanted to be used of God. Valeri had been a believer for 1 year. Valentina had been a believer for 3 years. So they took the possible names of where they're going to live, and they rolled them up. And they put them in a coffee can and started shaking them up, kind of like casting lots on where they were going to live. And Valeri, I like doing this, Valeri says, I'm the man, I will pick. And so he reaches in and he pulls out the little piece of paper and it says, Yakutsk. She looked at him and she said, no, I will pick. I'm the woman, I will pick. And so she took the piece of paper and threw it in the can. They shook it up and pulled it out again, and it was Yakutsk again. And none of the family wanted him to go. It's 60 degrees below zero. There were no other believers there. So right after they got married, they moved into this building, that house, or that apartment area. Actually, that's across the street. I'm standing in his front yard taking the picture. And so he and his wife moved there. There was no one that came to faith for 6 years. So they were trying to hold a ministry. And then in 1991, he led a 14-year-old boy to faith and two abused women that were recovering from the physical violence against him in the hospital, and they were both alcoholics. Those three that came to faith became the evangelistic team that went up and down the river here for 500 kilometers in both directions with a broken-down car held together with baling wire, basically, and took the gospel to all the villages, and they had never, ever, ever, ever heard the gospel. And there's still hundreds and hundreds of villages inside that region that have still not heard the gospel even today. And so we're actually, part of what I'm doing at SGA is helping the youth get in cars and then also airplanes, and we're sending them out to these villages to share the gospel. You might ask, well, how do you get into these villages for the first time? They just go and pick up trash. And so they go to the village and start picking up trash, and the people can't figure out why in the world would you want to clean up our village. And then they start saying, well, as God loves us, we love you. And they said, well, what is that? And they go and start sharing about the gospel. And so people have been coming to faith. So Valeri now is out there, and he and his wife are continuing the ministry all over the region. And part of what you're doing in supporting us is supporting Valeri, and he's finally getting to go to Bible school, and that's the training we're doing up there. Let's see. I'm going to show you some more pictures. Any questions? Oh, come on, guys. You're killing me. Yeah, if you were on that, I'll show you on the map.
Okay.
You've got a map in the back.
What is the project that you're trying to do right now? Getting coats and warm things?
Winter warmth. Okay. Winter warmth is in part just what you saw in the cold, where the funds that come in for winter warmth, it's going to start playing games with me. You keep seeing my grandkids, sorry. It's getting heaters, blankets, and other supplies into the war zone of Ukraine. I'm going to be there. That's why I'm doing this next Tuesday. I'll be in the war zone, and we're getting the winter aid into the war zone. We're also getting winter aid into the Far East. And then down in Central Asia, a lot of them, they'll live in buildings. It's 93% of Tajikistan is mountainous. They'll live in these clay houses, but no doors, and it's snowing outside, so they'll hang blankets up as doors to try to keep the cold air out, which is impossible. And so part of us is trying to get aid to them. Well, there's 11 countries that we do ministry in, but I've probably been to about 20 of them, 22 of them, and that just means I sit on a lot of airplanes. But it's pretty cool. God makes, you know, the one thing I've discovered traveling around the world, people are the same. Different language, different place they live, different traditions, but they're the same. That's why the Bible works. We're all basically the same. I meet people in different countries. They all want to talk about their grandkids. They all want to talk about their lives. They always want to talk about some of the successes and some of the difficulties. And it's the same challenges wherever we go. Money or no money, it's all the same. So one of the nice things about going to other countries is you realize there's a lot of things in your life that don't matter. The only things, and if you don't know, go read Ecclesiastes. But the truth is that many of the things that you have in your life don't matter. The number one thing is your relationship with God. And then second to that is your relationship with other people. Houses, money, careers, none of that matters. And the more you travel, the more you realize the only thing that matters is faith and people. And so they set that as a priority. Sir? That's a nice lead-in, because that's what all these pictures I'm about to show you are about. That's a really good question. It's a program that is designed for unchurched children. We had a little bit of a problem that a lot of the kids in the churches were getting very upset that unbelieving kids that never come back again were getting gifts and they were not. So we ran into that challenge, especially in orphanages and stuff, because the kids are saying, we're sitting in Sunday school, we're coming all the time, and all the candy and all the sweets and all the little gifts are going to kids that we know are doing these things we're not supposed to do. So how are they prospering and us kids that are in church not prospering? So we shifted gears and we've allowed the kids in the church to get gifts as well as kids outside of the church. But it's about 10% in the church and 90% unchurched. Some of the locations, like in the eastern part, I think I'll be able to find the pictures, but some of them rented out a hall and put on a program for 1,500 kids, three little churches that had about 30 members apiece. And they put on a production for 1,500 kids. And I watched it from the communist political officer's box in an old palace. Ministries or something like that. So this was actually some Americans that came over from Texas. And what we've learned is the best way to illustrate a story is to actually have the kids act it out. So we had to have kids that were sheep and kids that were shepherds. And some of them were little donkeys. And so we did the whole nativity. One got to hold the flashlight and the star, and everything's handmade. And they love the fact that nothing looks store-bought. They have to make everything. They get to imagine and pretend. When I am traveling in Central Asia, it's a story culture. They aren't used to logical truths. So I'll go to a dead village, and I'll sit down with them. And we did like Daniel in the Lion's Den. And we had all the kids. Some were tigers. Some were lions. And some were satraps. And some were... one was the king, and one was Daniel. And so we read the Bible and just had the kids act it out, and they never forget. So as long as the kids are acting out the story, they never forget. And we did David and Goliath. We did everything. And everywhere you go. Yes, we are. Oh, when you think of it, let me know. I'll stop. Well, you can think about it and let me know after. So this is actually in an orphanage in Ukraine. Okay, go ahead. Oh, interesting question. This is more God's choice than my choice. If it was originally my choice, I think I'd still be building rockets. But you become a missionary when God kind of puts it on your heart to go different places than where you are. See, missionary also means sent one. So you can go live in other countries, or you can travel to other countries, or sometimes maybe even a minister in a different place where you are, like to people who are struggling with drugs or stuff like that. But you make a decision to live your life in ministry. And in many ways, it's kind of like your pastor. There's not a whole lot of difference between that. It's just setting aside your life for serving God in a certain way. A lot of people answer that question differently. But it wasn't my plan to be a missionary. Not even close. It was not Christy's plan to be a wife of a missionary or go another country. So sometimes God asks you to do the tough things you never expected. But you know what? All of us can be witnesses. So when you're around other kids and you talk about Jesus, you're doing that same thing. Doesn't matter how old you are. As a little kid, you can do that. You don't have to wait until you grow up. Cool? That is a really good question. So they're here in Ukraine, and look at some of the things they're getting. Shampoo and and bath, all kinds of hygiene items, toothbrushes. Now, let me tell you, how about if for Christmas you got shampoo and a toothbrush? What would you think? You'd be happy?
I got it.
There you go. Well, actually, we put, I'm not saying anymore, but we throw stuff like that into the stock. So I love getting stuff like that. But for them, that was their gift. They got some warm items, like a knit cap or gloves, and then they would get some hygiene items. Some of them would get a bag of nuts, like walnuts and pecans and stuff like that. And they would think, I mean, these are orphan kids. The orphanage that we're there is a transition orphanage, which means the kids that are there are no longer than 60 days, and they just were taken away from their parents. So it's really hard when you're talking to these kids because they don't know why they're there. They're all homesick. It doesn't matter how terrible the parents are. It doesn't matter at all. They just want their parents back. And sometimes the parents are arrested. And so I've been there. I've actually been there when a mom was dropping a kid off, and she was raking her daughter's hands off of her arm to get her to go so that mom could leave and leave her daughter with the director, and she looked all of four. And just some of the stuff you see is unthinkable. And that's the Orphans Reborn program. And then we found a lot of the kids were at risk of human trafficking and of violence and things like that. So the kids that are inside the orphanage are better off than the kids outside the orphanage. At least they're protected inside the orphanage, even though there's violence in the orphanages between the kids. So now about 3,000 orphans we work with are all at-risk kids that are in different environments, a lot of them in Central Asia. So these are transition kids that had just literally been removed from their parents, and we were able to minister to them with Emmanuel's Child gifts that were there. They go together. Not usually. Usually they go together. And the hard part is 84% of these kids will never be adopted. 84. So 70% of the kids have a living relative, which makes them unadoptable. And then 30% are what they call true orphans, where there's no one to claim them. And the government takes care of them. They actually, the orphans say the lucky ones are the orphans where all family's dead, because then the government cares for them. If the 70% who are unadoptable, the government expects that when they turn 18, their family will take care of them. So when you age out of the orphanage, you actually have nowhere to go. So 70% of the orphans go into crime. You find that 70% of the girls, as you can imagine, go into crime. And the guys go into selling drugs and things like that because they don't know what to do. They can't even prepare their own meals. But the true orphans have at least a fighting chance because the government gives them an apartment to live in. But even then, it's pretty rough. So 1.1% of the orphans are actually adopted internationally. Between 10 and 11% of the kids are adopted within their host country. So what we're doing at SGA is ministering to the 84% of all the kids that don't get adopted. And of the kids that don't get adopted, some of them come to faith and actually start working with the team to go back to the orphanage and minister to more young kids. As much as you would like to think, they tried the foster care system and people were doing it just for money over in Russia. It's a mess. So there are less kids in the orphanages, but there's still about 700,000 kids. So we're only scratching the surface, a tenth of 1% of the kids. That's correct.
Why doesn't the government take care of the kids?
Well, they have to because their parents aren't taking care of them. Do your parents take care of you? I bet they do. And that is a huge blessing, but there's a whole bunch of kids that I've heard stories where they grow up hiding behind the stove or in closets because they're afraid of their mom. Mom and dads are doing drugs, or they go to prison, and they don't take care of them. They don't give them baths. They don't feed them. They don't take care of them. So the government comes and gives a place for these kids to live. And so people try to take care of them there. But it's hard for them because they want their parents. In fact, we hear stories of kids that will run away from the orphanage so they can go back to their parents. And the parents are, the teams that we've got so love these kids, they'll track down the kids and break into the apartments to rescue the kids, and they'll find the kids laying like on the kitchen floor while there's people doing drugs in the other room. They don't even know that they just broke into the apartment. So they'll pick up the kids. So a lot of the workers we work with, they'll have 14, 15 kids, and they're all adopted. They just adopt all the kids and take care of them because they just can't stomach what the kids go through. And that's why, for me, when I left, the number one program that got where I left was the Orphans Ministry. That was the first mission trip that Christine and I went on, was to go out to Central Siberia to work with orphans. And it's just... too many heart-wrenching stories. There are times I call Christy and I just want to cry for a while. Because some of the stuff you see is just too much. But that's one of the big reasons we have. It's an amazing program, and it's all supporting the churches ministering to the kids. So it's about 11,000. About 3,000 are not in orphanage, about 8,000 in orphanages in six countries. So this is Emmanuel's child, and Peter Vladicek is the guy on the left. He's a missionary pastor in Ukraine, and he's an amazing guy. He grew up in the same village that he's a pastor in. He pastors three churches, and he himself lives in absolute poverty, and they spend time, instead of inviting people to the church, he's going house to house to people who are poor. And he's doing Christmas outreach by knocking on the doors. So we leave room for innovation. So instead of having a Christmas program, he goes and he knows where all the kids are. And he's going to their homes and he's bringing food to them. And then he brings gifts for all the kids. And he usually brings stuff for the parents. And I've been there so many times, I know these kids. And I've been watching them grow up. And they have all kinds of difficulties. And then we're always bringing clothes to them and food and different items like that. Peter actually works, he's a pastor, but 3 days a week he actually works with SGA because he needed some extra money on the side. So we hire him to be a guard, which basically means he hangs out for a while. He's one of the most faithful men that I've ever met in my life. And that's what he does. I've watched this family grow up. You'll see they all go to Sunday school. But they're in an unbelieving home, and usually when I see them, they're fairly dirty, not cleaned up, and life is difficult for them. And then here was an outreach of a ton of unchurched kids in the community. This is in the city of Kiev, and inside the bags were all the gifts they got and the stars, and they put on a Christmas program. And you remember I talked about Roman earlier? In the middle is his two sisters. So the three of them are together. Because you didn't see that picture before, and so they take care of him. And so that's the government working to keep them all together. And the girls are trying to teach him to walk. He had to learn to be potty trained. He was two, but no one had ever spent any time with him. They're trying to teach him to talk. Now, here's an interesting one. It was Emmanuel's child at a shopping mall. It was the end of a shopping mall in a little children's play area. You know, some of the malls have the little fun things. Well, this was an area that was there that was like a little studio. And all the moms are looking on the side and sitting on the sideline. And they brought their kids down because they heard their... You know, like it's like Santa Claus is visiting, so everyone lines up. Well, I was shocked because I was expecting we were going to a church, and we pulled up at a shopping mall. This is in Far East Russia in Khabarovsk, and it was a two-level shopping mall. And I'm thinking, what are we doing here? He must be picking something up. He says, no, we're doing a Christmas program. I said, a shopping mall? You got to be kidding. He goes, no way. And so we walked down to the end, and they came around the corner, And the word was out across the mall that anyone who wants to learn about the real meaning of Christmas, come to the end of the shopping mall. And all the kids came down and piled up. And we had to do the Christmas program, but we didn't have any costumes. So we found curtains, shower curtains, bed sheets. One guy actually wore pajama pants around his head and put a belt around his head so he was the shepherd. And we did the Christmas program, and they had never heard the true message of Christmas. And so we actually acted out. I was Gabriel. And so we had a narrator that was translated into Russian. And I had a big sheet that was not big enough. And so I just draped it over my shoulders. And it would not win any prizes. But all these are unchurched kids. And they all got their gifts. They got the Bible. The children's Bible is kind of an illustrated Bible. It's not like the verses are in there, but it's not a complete. It's got a lot of the different stories, and it's got the gospel in it. They got that. And Stas was traveling with us, and all the kids lined up. You can see the blanket, the flannel, see the flannel shirt, and the blanket. He grabbed a blanket and sashed it over him so he looked like a shepherd. So you can see all the props we had, but that's all they cared about, is they wanted to know the family's name. And here is another, this is actually in a church where on Christmas Day they invited all the families in the inner city to come and do Emmanuel's Child. And they all got their star, and they all got their gift. And that's it for that roll of pictures. So for the Emmanuel's Child, it's amazing. It's probably one of the most fruitful ministries. And what they do is the funds that you provide is for a gift, for a Bible. There's a small amount for shipping the star over, to get the stars over. But it also purchases Sunday school materials. So when the kids come back, it's purchasing a year of Sunday school materials for the kids. And then a lot of the kids that do Emmanuel's Child don't come back after Christmas. But what they do is they give them like tickets with their address on it. And so when Easter comes, they take their address, and a dollar of all the Emmanuel's Child gifts are used to get Easter candy. So they invite the kids again to the Easter celebration and try to get them again. So the goal of the Emmanuel's Child program is year-round discipleship. It's not just a gift. There are other programs that it's just giving the kids a gift. But here we're equipping the church for year-round discipleship. So you make a big difference when you're giving that gift. You get bored, don't you? I couldn't do that. My back would break. Questions? So that's Emmanuel's Child and Orphans Reborn. And earlier you saw missionary pastors, summer camps are coming up, but it's kind of the same idea. And then winter warmth, that's a desperate need, the compassion ministry in Central Asia, Eastern Ukraine, and Eastern Russia.
The winter warmth is the funds better? Are there things to purchase there to take care of this? Would it be better to send coats and warm things over?
No, actually, the cost of throwing them on a shipping container and getting them over, of course, everyone likes to convince themselves that it's cheaper that way. But we have found some people on winter warmth are older, and that what they really need is a shawl and some vitamins because they aren't faring well, or maybe they need medicine. They really others need a space heater because it's a family. And so with the funds, we can figure out what each person needs. We started originally that we're going to buy bulk, and then they came to us and said, sir, can we have this instead, or can we have this, or this? Every family is different. So what you need in Central Asia is different than what you need in Far East Russia, which is different than the war zone. So we decided to start sending the funds over to the churches, and then we gave the churches some criteria on, I think it's, 30, the gift itself was like 30 some odd dollars. Get what you need within a certain framework. It kind of varies a little bit country by country because you have currency exchange and financial transfer rates to get the money over. That's kind of in the ballpark of where it's at. And then we send evangelistic literature and Bible support. Always trying to put Bibles in there. Good question. It's one of my favorite appeals because, and by the way, Christy and I give to everything. We actually personally support two missionary pastors and one orphanage out of Arizona. My church supports two missionary pastors, and we try to outpace all the small churches on Emmanuel's Child. So we did 44 Chalk Star System.
Why don't you want to just adopt one of the kids at Philippines?
Oh, you know, I want to, but most of them can't be adopted. And then the other side, it's like $40,000 to adopt. And it's really, really expensive. So what I try to do is go to all the orphanages and play with the kids. And if they need pillows, I try to make sure they get pillows. If they need blankets, I try to get blankets for them. A lot of the kids never get adopted. But I would like to. Our kids are all out of the house, and we even talked about adopting more kids. But Mrs. Mock knows that I won't be around as quite as much to help, so she's like, another good question. Yeah, lots of good questions. Oh, you know that. How about more questions? You guys tired? You're bored. I knew you were. I could see that. You're honest. I like it. I can try to dig up more pictures, or you guys could just ask questions of something you want to see. More pictures. More pictures. Oh my. Yeah, I see. No, the shoe boxes are kind of. I see the shoeboxes all over the place. And they're as you expect. Sometimes they run into customs problems. So I've seen shoeboxes given out during summer camps because it takes 6 months to get them through customs. So it kind of depends, but we do see the shoeboxes. I don't think that I've seen where someone is doing both shoeboxes and Emmanuel's Child at the same time. I don't think I've seen that. Oh, this is a Wayback Machine. Okay. Cool. Okay, this is in the mountains of Tajikistan, where there's a school. It was 6,000 feet in the mountains, and they had no money left. Most of the kids stopped learning by the time they're in seventh grade. And do you remember an old movie called 2012? It was kind of an apocalyptic movie where the whole earth was going to be covered in water because of climate change. And the only way to rescue them is all the scientists made arcs, and they were only rescuing certain people. Well, regretfully, all the kids on this mountain had gotten a copy, a bootleg copy of this movie in Tajik. And they looked and watched the movie and never saw any Tajik children. And they thought it was a documentary of what really was going to happen. And so they were weeping because they said, we think that the world has forgotten about us on this mountain. So when we came to visit, he said that the science teacher says, they will not listen to me. Can you teach my science class about the world around us and that there is no flood? And I said, if you let me teach from a Christian point of view, or I'll tell you why God is not going to cause a flood because there was a flood in the beginning, and you let me teach creation, I will teach physics, and I will tell you everything. And they said, please. And they turned it, this is a Muslim class, and the teachers are Islamic, and they turned over the class to me. It was a science class. And I taught from Scripture about the flood and the evidences of the flood and about the natural order of things and what they see in the world around them, and that another global flood is not coming next year, and they have not forgotten about the Tajik children, and that God remembers the Tajik children. And at the end, the teacher, we bought binders for all the students because none of the students had ever had anything to put their notes in. And at the end, the teachers came back and said, we knew the imam was wrong. We had heard rumors that Christians were actually very smart people, not idiots. And I just listened to you teach science, therefore tell me the rest of the story that you want me to know. And I gathered all the science teachers around, and we talked about the gospel, and they took me for tea. And I'm welcome back into the mountain anytime. And this guy's an imam. And he was the one that told them all the Christians don't know what they're talking about. And they all stood up and said, you're a fool, go back to your drinking. Now this, you remember I told the story about a guy that's always getting kicked in the ribs? This is Hafiz and his family. When I was visiting him there, they're outside of Baku, Azerbaijan. He's one of the most prolific ministers to children in that region, and probably once every 4 months they'll pull him into the police station and beat him and say, if you don't leave, we're going to take your children and we're going to put them in the orphanage. This picture is only a couple years old, so it's current now, and he goes right back and ministers every single day, knowing that they could forcibly take his family away from him. But he's not shy from teaching kids the gospel. So he's an amazing guy. This is the gal there on the right is Natasha Slobodian. And Natasha has breast cancer. And when she had breast cancer, they told her that she should slow down and rest and take care of her body. What she did is she started making 7 pies a day. And she would take these 7 pies, and she would kind of meat pies, and she would go to 7 different points where there's underground sewers, because she heard that all the street kids were living in the sewers to stay warm, and she knew that none of the kids had food, so the kids knew that a certain time of the day when they lived either in the sewers or on the streets or anywhere, she would show up with a meat pie. And then she would feed all the kids with whatever she had. While she was there one time, there's that the little guy in the vest. His name's Idar. Idar was living in the sewers because everyone gave up on him. He was an orphan kid, but he was getting into fights all the time. And so they took him out of the orphanage and put him in like a juvenile facility. And then he was getting in fights in the juvenile facility, so they threw him out on the street, literally. So when she met Idar, he was 14 years old, and he came up for a pie, and she shared the gospel with him. He came to faith. By age 15, after coming to faith, he got so excited that he developed the preacher's club, which is why he's got a tie on. And in high school, they found a little place to rent for him. And he had dozens and dozens of young boys that would come out of the sewers, and he would teach them the gospel and teach them to be preachers. And he was conscripted into the military, came back, and he is now ministering there in that region. He's done multiple mission trips to Africa now, and he is ministering in a church, and he's 22. And that's the power of a pie, you know, because all it took, and by the way, she's alive and well. And for the life of me, I can't find the interview, the video interview I did. But she basically said, let it be done to me as you will, Lord. And she says, if you desire for me to have cancer, then I will have cancer. If you desire for me to have pain, I will have pain. But I'm going to honor you by going out and reaching these kids with the gospel. And so she's just got a very tender heart, and she's still ministering today. It's pretty amazing. And she always would dress nice. She didn't want anyone to realize how sick she was. And you already saw Vlad and his son. So those are more stories. More stories? I can keep looking. I'm afraid I've got so many stories. That's okay. I told those poor kids. I feel really bad for the kids. I mean, I'd be bored with me. Yeah, so that'd be good. And I'll look for other things. Searching. You can let them go and I'll keep searching.